Hi, my name's Eliza. I'm a planner and your host. This is Funeral Planner Podcast. Today, I'll be talking to Alexa Schindel about who she is, how she could be remembered, and if all that could be creatively encapsulated in her end-of-life plans. On this podcast, I would love to reevaluate the stigma of talking about this part of the life cycle and even find joy in thinking about what matters most to each of us. I also hope that recording these ideas will be useful someday and that thinking about how we want to be remembered reminds us each of how we want to live. And with that, let's meet our guest. Hi, Alexa.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Thank you so much for coming on. I first want to ask before we get to know you, like how you're feeling about the topic, what's your mindset going into talking about this?
I actually love talking about it. people find it super morbid that I can talk about it like it's talking about the weather or like sports game. Because I am a registered nurse, so for me it's, and my dad's a doctor, so it's kind of like death was a topic of conversation without being taboo. So
what kind of doctor is your dad?
He's a primary care physician.
Okay.
So, and geriatric, so his patients, you know, he would know them from when they're 40 to when they died at 95. Yeah. You know. Yeah. So so always kind of more of a topic of conversation rather than like that's his job. So that was like when he came home to talk about dinner, how was your day? Like, oh, you know who got diagnosed with cancer today?
Yeah,
so totally. That's kind of has been in my life for a while now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, it doesn't, even if like it's of interest and comfortable in our like household, sometimes it can still be, difficult or poignant or like I said, the logistical part of it,
right?
We're like, great. And then when it gets personal, it's tough. So just to acknowledge that. So tell me about yourself. What is your ethnicity?
So I'm white. I grew up in New Jersey, born and raised. I'm 30 years old. I've been a nurse for gone on eight years now.
Isn't that wild?
Yes.
Whenever
it is.
Spooks me.
Yes. I know. Time kind of just flew by. Yeah. I feel like I'm still a new nurse sometimes.
Yeah,
and then when I see new nurses, I'm just like, was I you?
Yeah.
Ever? but yeah, I've been living in New York City for about 10 years now. Or actually more than that. 12, 13. And yeah.
And do you subscribe to any particular religious, spiritual belief system or community?
Yeah, I'm Jewish. Born and grew up pretty conservative Jewish, went to a Jewish day school. I don't really practice as much as I used to. More just growing up and things changing, life changing.
Yeah.
But definitely still kind of believe in some things, but I wouldn't really say I'm a religious person.
Yeah. We'll get into that more, but, as a community. You grew up in Jersey, you live in New York now, and you're a nurse. Wonderful.
Yes.
So this part of the show, I offer, it's vulnerable for, like, you to be the only one talking, so I usually bring up, like, something I've been thinking about the topic of living and dying, and I was thinking about just talking about something that happened today, which was a patient that I saw who is 97 years old, living at home independently, like is doing great, but also has some diagnoses that put her at risk for hospitalization and are terminal ultimately. And she just said, just the how we help folks who say statements that are contrary in those situations. For example, she, very religious, Catholic, said, I don't really want to talk more about when I brought up like CPR and intubation, if that were to have to happen. She said, like, I don't really want to talk about like what decisions I would make or what I would tell my granddaughter to make for me, because like it's up to God and all what's there to talk about if it's up to God. And at the same time, she was verbalizing, I don't want to put my granddaughter in a difficult situation.
Right. I think that's a lot of people thinking that. But if, I mean, that's why you don't have to, because you make the decision for them.
Right.
And I think that's where a lot of people, remember when you bring up a healthcare proxy, they're like, well, am I dying tomorrow? Right. And you're like, no, it's insurance. Why do you have insurance? It's because one day you'll need it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, both my parents were very adamant since we were kids also, like talking about, I don't want intubation.
Yeah.
I don't want a trach. I don't want to die in a hospital. Like very clear and like, you know, I know it might be controversial, but like, it's not really up to the family member if the person wants that. Mm-hmm. And like, I'm very adamant about that, of like making those decisions and having the people respect around you what decision you've made, whether it hurts them or not, that like, this is the way you want to go.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
I mean, 97, so she, I guess she's lived her own life for 97 years, so I guess she could die the way she lived. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so just bringing, it always is a difficult thing to respond to. Mm-hmm. I find myself, I'm lucky because now I have a caseload of patients, so I'll see her again in a month. So I just was like, okay. And now I can just kind of take a step back, think about how I want to like approach it from a different angle perhaps. But that is what I've been thinking about recently. And now I'll ask you our big six questions. Mm-hmm. The first one being, what do you think happens after you die, and what has led you more or less to have that belief or lack of belief?
I think there's a happy place you go to. It doesn't look the same for everyone. I want to believe that after life you can kind of relax, and like if you want to stay on a beach for the rest of your life, that's where you go.
I don't
believe in hell. I don't even remember how I was raised to think if there's a heaven and hell. That was never like a religious thing, to be honest. I don't even know if it's a Jewish thing. I don't know. But yeah, I just think you go somewhere like nice, and hopefully you see your loved ones that you had also passed, and you can go back to hang out and chill.
Well, I think just that it wasn't, my family is Catholic, and have talked to my parents about this, and like also just went to the Rudin, I talked about it on the last episode, but the Rudin Museum is having a exhibit on, it's called Death Is Not the End, and it's like comparing Christianity and Buddhism and end of life stuff, and Christianity showing like hell as an option and a incentive not to do
to do bad
things, and the like guilt that comes with that, the like creeping, I've had loved ones of mine who are Catholic like kind of describe it as like this kind of like what if like feeling of like when you don't do something according to like Christian beliefs or tradition or Catholic, that like, but what if that is true? Hell sounds pretty bad. So I'm glad you didn't grow up
if you do this you will go to hell. It was never like that.
Well, that shapes your view then, that it's a happy place. What do you want to happen to your body after you die?
Buried. I want to be buried in the cemetery.
Do you have a family plot or anything?
No. So my grandparents and my mom are buried in the same cemetery, mm-hmm. but not near each other. Mm-hmm. It was very much like my grandparents and my mom separately at different, obviously different times, like mm-hmm. both wanted to be at a grave that no one could walk over. So they're specifically located at like the end of paths.
Okay.
So at the end of a path somewhere, both are next to each other. So yeah, just, definitely buried.
Wonderful. Where is the cemetery?
In New Jersey.
Okay. Do you, as a side question, which I guess kind of informs maybe if you would want this, like, mm-hmm. do you go there to visit them? Is it a source of, like, do you feel like you're visiting them there, or you feel mm-hmm. their presence more elsewhere?
For my grandparents, because they were young when I passed away. I was young when they passed mm-hmm, away. Mm-hmm. So I kind of went there to visit them. Mm-hmm. For my mom, I don't feel that mm-hmm. as a place to visit her. I feel attached to her in like other ways, inanimate objects,
yeah.
going to get ice cream,
yeah.
going shopping, you know, things that we would do together.
Totally.
So yeah, the cemetery for me is not really it's not really a sad place. It's not anything, yeah. I don't feel anything
yeah.
kind of thing. I know some other family members in my family like feel connected to her there, but, I know we could probably talk about this, but like a body and a spirit are two different things in my opinion. So,
right.
Like a soul, you know, your soul leaves your body way before you die. So
yeah
just, yeah. So no, the answer is no.
Yeah, that makes sense and resonates with, I've had when my grandmother died, I think because she is Catholic and she like being buried her body, mm-hmm. like that tradition is important to her, and I feel like she, I don't know, would feel a connection mm-hmm. there, if that makes sense.
So my so my mom always felt a connection to her parents when we would go to the cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
It would always be very upsetting, always cry. It was always like, I need to go visit my parents.
Yeah.
I guess it really varies. It means so many different things to so many
but
people.
My dad doesn't feel like it's not particularly like that's like you're saying about mm-hmm. your mom, like that's not where he feels her,
right?
Which they'd never been there together before, so right. That makes sense. What would you want your funeral / memorial to look like? And this is obviously a tough question. It's like mm-hmm. now, tomorrow,
right?
100 years from now, so like kind of whatever version of that you want to answer.
Yeah, I mean, I guess like just from the experiences I've had, like the funerals, I mean, they're there for a reason. They're obviously there for everyone else to, you know, memorialize you and talk about you and cry and laugh and let the emotion out and stuff. Mm-hmm. But for me, like, I feel like I would just want people to like not be in like a musty room mm-hmm. and like
mm-hmm.
I know like obviously there's logistics of like the body and the burial and mm-hmm. all that kind of stuff, but like I just I wouldn't want people to like all be going to like a funeral home to like talk about me, like let go to like Central Park, like sit like, you know, hang out. I guess there had to have to be a burial, but like I kind of would I'd more low-key mm-hmm. and like not so like procedural, if mm-hmm. that's the word. I don't know.
Like, not like for the sake of it.
Yeah.
Like checking the boxes.
I know for my grandparents and my mom, it was like more of a religious thing. You know, they were buried in, so religious Jewish people are buried in a just like a plain wood box.
Mm-hmm.
Like you know, you came to the earth, you leave it same way, mm-hmm. just like kind of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
So that was very important to all of them mm-hmm. to be buried that way. So yeah, I guess it'd have to have some sort of like burial, but mm-hmm. like it wouldn't be, I don't think like at a funeral home, like the whole just classic funeral.
Yeah.
So yeah, kind of more just like a celebrate me.
You know?
Like I wouldn't say have fun, because I actually don't think that's appropriate for a funeral, but mm-hmm. like have it just be a chill environment where you can talk and laugh, because I think laughter is a part of, you know, crying, laughing is the, what is it, the coin.
Yin and the yang.
So yeah, more of a chill time, but but definitely there for a reason.
Sounds like gathering, not buttoned up.
No.
Like people enjoying each other's company, but and like being there for the experience and what serves them in their grief, but not.
Right. I guess it's what serves them in their grief. I think that's where, and maybe that would serve me most in my grief. Of kind of just talking and, you know, not it being so buttoned up and, like I said, like procedural and just kind of like, this is what you do for a funeral kind of thing.
Yeah, I feel like those, I mean, people cope all sorts of ways, and like sometimes going through the motions of those procedural things, I think, can be comforting to people who don't want to feel their emotions around others, particularly, but or express them. But that's probably not the right thing anyway.
No, but that's totally true.
Things are put in place,
you know, obviously religious ceremonies are put in place so that it's kind of like you do A, B, C, D, E, and then...
But when it is too overwhelming, like, as a death is and can be, like, those steps can help. But
no,
in general,
that makes total sense, actually, now that you say that.
But I know, but I also, like, I guess I just don't want to sound insensitive to folks for whom they're like thinking about this at all. I can't even engage with this because I'm
so
wrapped in
that's
my
grief. That's true. That's very true.
But I would want what you're talking
about.
Also. okay. So now this is moving into the from post-death to pre-death. If you didn't have capacity, who would you want to make decisions for yourself? Who would you want to be your healthcare proxy?
I guess at this point in my life, my dad. Because, like I said, he is a doctor, and like I think the healthcare professional superpower is separating facts and feelings, and you know, I know my sister and brother very well, and they just wouldn't have
that.
That
would be hard.
Yeah, it would be too hard for them. And the same way, a woman didn't want her granddaughter making medical decisions. Like, even though, you know, you understand it, it's still hard to just be like, no, we're doing this because this is what she wanted. So, yeah, I'd say my dad at this point in my life.
Yeah, good. And what would you say to your dad to help him make decisions for you, like something like what you're willing to give up for the sake of more time, what is quality of life to you, when would it not be worth living, and what are you afraid of about death or dying?
Yeah, I mean, definitely quality of life for me would be just like engaging, like being able to, like, if I really, really don't want a trach or a peg, but, like, if it were temporary or something and, like, I still had my mind and still was able to listen, I think that's where quality of life lies, of relationships and interactions with people.
Absolutely.
But, yeah, I think that would be what I would say is, if there is no quality of life in that way, I don't know, pull the plug, do whatever, you know, just make sure that I'm not in pain and that I, you know, dignity and death, as we say in the medical profession, of, you know, just kind of being aware that I don't just want to be a body laying there.
Yeah.
For sometimes other, you know, family member sakes.
Yeah.
You know? So I think that's where, what I would tell him, like, I just, and he has it all written down. My mom had a very, very written out living will, and so does my dad. I'm actually my dad's healthcare proxy. What was the second part of the question?
I think you answered it. Just like, what would you tell him to, like, inform his decisions for you in that case. I think what you said about, like, this is another aspect of, like, talking to another nurse instead of a lay person of, like, when this question comes up for me, my mind goes to, like, trach, peg, colostomy. And I think that, interestingly, as, like, working in the hospital setting, I have my views have changed and were more, like, I would never want any of those things to now, I think, working in the home setting and also just greater awareness of, like, ability and disability, awareness and activism, like, just that, like, it is possible, it is, many people do every day, like, have, it's, no one wants it. I really, really don't want a colostomy bag. I really don't. But, please, no. But, like, if it did, I do know now that if it did mean I could live in a way that I was still engaging. And that I would be like, you know what? It's shitty, but I will
literally. I know. And that's, because also, I mean, we've, as medical professionals, like, we're seeing, like, the worst of the worst. So it's in, like, the hospital, like,
it's like the colostomy that explodes every day.
Or just, like, you know, someone with a trach and, like, but, you know, so I used to work in the cardiothoracic ICU, and sometimes after surgery, the patients just wouldn't be able to be extubated and would need a trach, and usually short term, but, and sometimes, like, they would just look at you, like, the eyes, and you're just like, I know. I can't do it. I can't change anything. And, like, that's what I think. Because you're like, I know how this person's feeling. Like, I never want to feel that way.
Exactly.
So, it's hard. Ignorance is bliss sometimes.
If you were given this is the last big question. If you were given 3 months to live, what three things would you prioritize doing?
Definitely just seeing my loved ones, but being particular of who I saw and, and who I actually wanted to spend time with, having great meals. I don't really think I would, I think I just want to stay in New York City and like enjoy the things I love about this city. Maybe go to the beach because I love the beach.
What beach?
New Jersey, Avon. And kind of, just in a way, like, amplify the best parts of my life now, you know?
Not work, sorry.
Yeah, that, not work, sorry, Lennox Hospital. I'm gonna take a leave of absence. Just not, like, go on a crazy trip to, you know, Thailand or something. Like, to me, that's, like, not worth my time. Just experience what I love to experience.
Yeah, I like that. Amplify the things you already love. All right. I'm going to pick a few of the, what I think of as the fun questions. I'm interested in what, especially as a nurse, what are three qualities of a good death in your mind?
I think dying the way you want to die. I think, I guess the only, this is a very weird thing to say, but like, I love the way my mom was dying and died. She did it the way she wanted to do it and, like, didn't really care who, said. And I think it's just, like, being obviously selfish because it's the ending of your life, but just, like, I don't know, I just think, like, saying what you want to say to everybody, like, whoever you want to say it to, and like, leaving, like, no stone left unturned, which is what my mom definitely did with me and my family and her friends, and Yeah, I guess that's what I always would say. Like, my mom died the way she lived, which was just, like, honest and kind of selfless and selfish in the same sense. So, yeah, just...
Patting that needle.
Yeah.
When was this?
She passed May 22nd, 2019.
Okay.
So it's going to be 4 years. But, yeah, just kind of, like... eating what you want to eat and watching what you want to watch and like being outside and breathing fresh air. And, yeah, I think those are just, kind of the qualities I'd want of just like honesty. And, also I guess knowing you're going to die is another, is a big thing. Yeah.
To be able to facilitate that.
And talk about, like, how everyone else is going to deal with it once you're gone. Which is, like, something so crazy that you never, like, you never think you're going to be gone. So I think that's where the biggest help for me was when she would talk about, like, well, you, what are you going to do? And I'm like, well, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So I think I learned a lot about death through her. And... you know, starting the grieving process before she was even gone. But,
How long did you know that she was dying?
So she went on hospice care, actually, well, 3 months before, but she had cancer for the, she was diagnosed in, I want to say, 2017? Went through chemo, everything, and then she was, like, in, cancer-free for 5-6 months. In 2018, and then it came back in 2019, it spread. And so summer of 18, she got re-diagnosed, and then she passed May of 19. So it was like, you know, a process, a slow process, but I think we really knew was in, the, when, like, February of, of 19, yeah. So it was a long, you know, decline, if you will.
It's a difficult, if impossible, question to answer. Like, when did you know she was dying?
No, but then, you know, she signed her own hospice papers. Yeah. So she was the one who wanted her own. She was always in control of her life, in control of everything, control of the family, and she's like, I'm going to be in control of my death. And we're like, hell yes, you will.
We will support you. Support you in that.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, I would love to also, I think in that vein, this is a tough question. I'm giving you the tough question.
Okay.
what would you want your loved ones to know if you didn't know you were going to die, if you died without a chance for closure? It's the hardest one, objectively.
Yeah, no, I, like, just how much I love them and, like, how much they bring joy to my life and the laughs and, like, that is what, you know, I've had great friends in my old position and now I have also great friends in my new position and, the biggest thing is just, like, laughing all day. Yeah. Like, we have a ridiculous job.
Yeah.
And, like... I always say if I don't laugh, I'm gonna cry. So I'm gonna choose to laugh today.
Yeah.
And yeah, just kind of like, I think my mom passing like really, really taught me of like the, it's like so cliche, but like the little things don't mean any, like really don't mean anything. And I think like. Letting the people in my life know that whether they know it or not, like they have like made me the person I am, like the adult I am. And especially my family and all we've been through and just kind of like letting them know, like I just how much you love someone. And like, it's never too cliche to say, I love you and like give someone a hug. And like, listen, I've not always been this way, but I definitely have become softer over the years. And kind of just like not, life is long, but it also goes by fast. Mm-hmm. So, like, not just being like, I'll do it tomorrow. And I think that's the biggest thing that has changed me. But also just with the people I love and, keeping friendships that I love and friendships that I, you know, that are not letting things pass, go. So, yeah, I think just kind of letting everyone know that they're really important to me.
Wonderful. Thank you. Thanks for taking on the hard
one. It's a therapy session, man.
Oh, boy. No, don't say that. Not qualified for that. Okay. I also want to ask, you checked off the ones about, like, I think I want to ask, like, in your work, because I was not in, like, a intensive care environment, where more of a step down, and you having seen people on life support extensively working with that, I don't know, how did you deal with, like, the people who surprise you, and then the people, the, but also the, I'm sure statistics stacked against people, and, like, thoughts about life support, about, being in a comatose vegetative state, that sort of thing. What are your takeaways from the bedside?
I think we have seen many times where a patient will do better, and also, like, at no fault to the, or I don't know what the word is, but, like, because of the medical staff, you know, we worked really, really hard to get these patients better and exercise them, physical therapy, you know, breathing, all that kind of stuff, when they were obviously a little better. But I think, you know, I'm I feel like I'm like, don't put me on anything. Like, I don't want anything. It was always so nice to see, and especially getting to know the family, you know, when a patient was in there in the hospital for so long, you get to know the family as well. And there were times where I thought that the family kept the patient, you know, alive for too long.
Yeah.
Because it got to the point where, as I said before, like, this doesn't even look like your dad anymore. I'll never forget it. I had this woman, she wasn't even that old, she had like a massive heart attack, she ended up passing, but it was a total shock. She was getting her hair done, and like all of a sudden she's like, oh, I don't feel well, and all of a sudden she passed out, ambulance called, had a massive MI, and she was in the hospital with us, and like, you know, there was she had three daughters, and like they were all so supportive, and we kind of were just there for them because we kind of knew what was happening. So it was more for the family than obviously, I hate to say, for the patient, because we were giving medical attention to the patient, of course. But, and I kind of, and you know, the, and I kind of, my mom had probably passed like a year at that point, and she was like, what am I going to do without my mom? And she was probably in her late 40s, early 50s, the woman. And I was like, you'll never feel okay without your mom.
Yeah.
And, you know, in that sense, it was like, I mean, I didn't even tell her my story, but like, she probably was like, who's this young girl talking to me? Like, and I think, you know, but then seeing the patients that do well, it's like, it's incredible. It's so beautiful to see them walk out, you know? And that's why the ICU is, it gets draining after a while, as we spoke about earlier. Like, it's, the highs are highs, but the lows are low. And, like when you saw like the fruits of your labor pay off, where you're like, oh my God, like I can't, I'm so happy this guy walked out. Like, that is such an incredible thing. And bringing in God of, you know, a miracle.
It was like, really coin flip.
Like, it's exactly like, but then some people are expecting a miracle and you're just like, I don't think it's going to happen. It's kind of right. It's like the cards you're dealt. I don't know. But yeah, just being in the ICU, like, it's, it's an interesting place in the sense of, like, there are, right, like I said, just really sick people who you were like, that guy. So we also did ECMO, like the and like, we're like, that guy was on ECMO last week and now he's sitting up eating lunch. That's crazy. It's incredible. But then there's other times where, you know, the woman was just getting her hair done and it's like, it sucks. But, so yeah, it's definitely shaped the way that I look at things, obviously. And, shapes the way that I think it's more even just talking to my family, because it's like, you could put me like this, but you can't keep me like this. I think that's where, my outlook has on the ICU for sure.
Yeah.
I don't even know if I answered that question, but
you did. I think that, like, yeah, I've just reckon with every day the way in which I have, like, more understanding and more uncertainty, like, that I'm more cautious with my, like, even just in my personal life, like, had a family member who was not, like, things were really looking south and now doing fine. And I was, like, as the nurse in the family, I was kind of like, I've seen this 100 times before and usually doesn't go well.
Right.
And then it did. But I just feel like
keep the expectation that, a little on the lower side, everyone.
But not being too certain, even if I do this for a living.
Right. Like, no, for sure, because you've seen the well, I don't know, but it might be the exception, not the rule type of thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay, I think one more fun one is just if people were visiting you when you were dying or had lost consciousness, what would you want them to be, like, doing in the
playing
in,
music?
Yeah.
Definitely playing music.
Yeah.
I think that would be the number one thing.
Mm-hmm. I know. Don't you? I often think this, like, in the hospital. Why
people don't play music more. Yeah,
literally never.
Yeah.
There's, like, I can think of, like, one patient a year that would, like, play music sometimes. I'm like, when I'm in my home, I'm playing music all day long.
No,
and
we
visit people in their homes. anyway.
Yeah. No, I remember I had a patient that I actually ended up getting very close to the family. But there'd always be a radio in the room.
Yeah.
And, like, I'm like, oh, I'm so jamming out to, like, 60s rock. Like,
exactly.
Let's go. But
I'm going to do my job better.
Right. Like, I think everyone's happier.
Yeah.
Like, I thought about that. I was like, I don't know why we don't play music in, like, just, like, the hallway. Like, put on, like, a slow jam, like, whatever.
Do you guys have the CARE channel, which plays, like, classical music?
We have, like, a couple.
Mostly, but people only use it for end-of-life patients. So then it's, like, if you put it on in someone else's room, it's like, are they dying?
Oh, God.
But I love it, and I would put it on in as many people's room as possible.
Yeah, I don't know why people, I mean, there's literally music therapy. Like, I don't know why people don't use music more as a
healing, like,
healing, coping, like, all the above.
Yeah.
So yes, that's what I would want. I'd want music. I think I'd want pictures, even though, you know, maybe I wouldn't be able to see them, but I think pictures. I think, I don't need flowers.
Yeah.
No flowers.
Pictures
and music and kind of just maybe like a, I don't know, can't think of anything that would be like a tchotchke that I would need in that room. But yeah, I think just music is the most important.
Well, that is a perfect transition
yes.
to the final section, which is what, if you had to pick one, or I don't like limiting people, so one or two final, like, songs of what you would want to be played in that room, if you had to pick one, or a song for your funeral, or a song right now that makes you feel most alive and yourself, something in that realm, something I can add to my funeral planner podcast playlist.
I feel like, the thing is, like the tone, like, I don't, like, funeral, I feel like, would be, like, like disco or, like, Donna Summer. Mm-hmm. Like, where, like, I want it to be upbeat. Mm-hmm. But, like, if we're in my, like, room and I'm dying, like... let's play, like, Fleetwood Mac or something. Like, a little more chill. I don't have a specific song. I can't think of it right now. Maybe I should prepare better.
No, it's okay. I mean, any Fleetwood.
Yeah.
Landslide or Dream. What? Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything from Dreams.
Yeah, I don't know. Damn.
It's okay.
But yeah, my funeral, I feel like if we're gonna, like, we're gonna play, like, fun, uppity music.
Mm-hmm. Like a, yeah, like a gathering you'd have.
Yeah.
When you're living.
Yeah. Right, exactly. Some, yeah, like classics.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever that looks like.
Well, whatever year. If you do think of a particular song, but I like the guidelines of Donna Summer and Fleetwood Mac are
perfect.
I think all that's left to say is, well, first, just to ask you if you have any final thoughts, like things we touched on but you didn't get to say more about, thoughts you had before this that you wanted to say that you didn't get to.
No, I think this is a great conversation that you have. I actually like talking about it, and also, you know, every day I ask my patients, do you have a healthcare proxy? And yeah, they are like, what's that? And it's crazy to me they don't know what that is, but and I think a lot of people think if they name someone that they'll die tomorrow. But no, I just think it's super important to talk about death and dying because it's part of life.
Mm-hmm.
How do you get to heaven? You have to die. So, yeah, I appreciate you doing this.
Yes. And I, more than you appreciate me doing this, I appreciate you doing this because I can't do it without someone on the other end. So I,
no problem.
Yeah, and especially you, Alexa, I was really looking forward to this. I appreciate you, like, reaching out in the first place and then following up. Mm-hmm. And nurse to nurse, it's also a nice conversation to have, acknowledging of, like, what we do and what we've seen and what has led us to our beliefs, professionally to personally. And it's really wonderful to talk to you, so thank you for coming on the episode.
Thank you.